You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is going to make us sound, well, kind of nerdy, but you know what we do for fun around here? We spend a lot of time picking over the details of what the Federal Reserve is doing and what that's going to mean for this economy. It's interest rates that get most of the attention, of course, but the Fed's going to start running off its balance sheet, too. And we've talked about this a little bit, that since the financial crisis, and especially since the beginning of the pandemic, the Fed has bought trillions of dollars in securities, bills and notes and bonds issued by the U.S. Treasury mostly, but also mortgage-backed securities. And this week, the Fed is going to start the long, slow process of getting rid of them. So we asked Marketplace's Justin Ho to explain why the heck the Fed owns mortgage-backed securities to begin with and what it hopes it's going to happen when it gets rid of them.
The reason why the Federal Reserve owns mortgage-backed securities goes back to the golden days of the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, when the Fed was trying to prevent the market for mortgages from collapsing.
During the crisis, every financial institution in the world had some exposure to the U.S. housing system.
That's Jim Vogel at FHN Financial. He says those institutions had no interest in buying more housing bonds.
And without that supply of capital, the Fed stepped in as a buyer, in effect, of last resort.
The Fed ended up buying over $1 trillion worth of mortgage bonds, in the process pumping over $1 trillion into the economy, and kept buying them for several years, says Winnie Caesar at Credit Sites.
In the, call it 2009 to 2014 period, for the most part, the Fed was still adding holdings to its balance sheet, both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities.
In 2017, the Fed started letting some of its mortgage bonds expire. But then the pandemic happened, so the Fed went back to buying mortgage bonds. Caesar says the goal, again, was to get more cash into the economy.
Make sure that borrowers were able to borrow, that property valuations were still going to be relatively stable to avoid a great financial crisis 2.0.
Now, the Fed's back to letting its existing bonds expire, so it gradually owns fewer and fewer of them. Megan Green is chief economist at the Kroll Institute. If the Fed isn't buying more mortgage bonds, she says,
then you're going to need a private sector actor to step in if you want to maintain all these mortgages out there.
When private investors buy those mortgage bonds, that pulls cash out of the overall economy.
Then there's less capital generally sloshing around the system, then that should slow down demand.
And that, in theory, should take some of the upward pressure off of inflation. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
I personally am a big fan of quick and efficient meetings, but OPEC Plus might have gotten a little carried away today. 11 minutes is what it took for the oil cartel to decide to increase global production later this summer. Increase a little bit, it should be said. So we got Abhi Rajendran on the phone for some explanation and analysis. He's the director of oil market research at Energy Intelligence. Abhi, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this announcement today from OPEC?
Yeah, it was an interesting announcement. It was, a little bit of a carrot for everyone, right? I think there were a lot of winners on the face of it coming out of this. I'll get to, how much it's really going to matter in terms of affecting oil prices in a sec, but
I'll tell you what. Let's get to the winners in a minute. Let's get to right away what it's going to do to oil prices.
The reality is not much. The group was already adding about 430,000 barrels per day each month.
Yeah.
In incremental supply. So they just accelerated the supply addition slightly, right? Instead of 430, they're going to do 650,000 barrels a day, for July and for August, effectively bring forward the end of the supply tapering by a month. But that incremental supply, again, there's questions around, who's going to actually be able to add it. And I think the answer is just a few countries, a few members. And the impact on oil markets is going to be, fairly minimal.
Right.
And we're still headed for kind of a hot summer here, weather-wise and price-wise.
So let me ask you then the winners, right? And let me tick off a couple and you can say winner or loser, right? Saudi Arabia, they now have clearance to pump some more oil. Winner or loser?
Winner.
Okay. Russia, which is under sanction, its supply, the amount that it's pumping is decreasing. Winner or loser?
I would say they're a winner too, mainly because, you know, again, you know, there was some chatter about, you know, possible exemption for Russia. Not that that would matter much either, but, you know, again, Moscow didn't ask for that. You know, that was not really talked about. You know, OPEC Plus has generally, you know, kind of, you know, been supportive of Russia over the last couple of months as their supply has gotten more and more strained. But even, you know, with kind of the slightly accelerated production, Russia will remain a core OPEC Plus member. That is my expectation for, you know, for even beyond the fall and the end of the year, that they will remain a core member. So they're a winner too, I think.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Okay. Now I'm going to get to the geopolitics of it. The United States of America and President Joe Biden, winner or loser?
A winner, but, you know, again, you know, I would say a winner because it, you know, they got a little bit more oil out of OPEC Plus. But, you know, in terms of actually affecting prices, you know, it's not going to really change the trajectory. So in that sense, you know, I would say, you know, a loser from a market impact standpoint.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go back to market impact. The American consumer, the oil consumer in the United States, that is, seems to me to be the loser because it's not going to have that much near term impact on prices at the pump.
That's right. I think the key driver that driving you know, oil markets is what's going on in the refined product markets, right? The gasolines, the diesels, and then some of the other products, where there are shortages. And you know, during, you know, the COVID era, we lost, you know, 3.5 million barrels a day of global refining capacity, and that's really you know, kind of, you know, hitting the consumer and hitting the market. And, you know, and then we expect this to continue over the summer, you know, as driving season picks up, as air conditioning season picks up in the Middle East. That's not talked about much, you know, really around the world, you know, construction season picking up, plus China coming out of COVID. There's a lot of, you know, factors that'll push prices or at least keep them fairly high. The refiners will continue to sort of chase that market. I mean, in doing so, they'll continue to buy as much crude as they can, which will keep the oil prices, you know, kind of elevated, at least for, you know, the next couple of months.
Abhi Rajendran, he's at Columbia, also at Energy Intelligence. Abhi, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.